Hello and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm Lee Strickland, your host from Focus Resources and FocusResourcesInc.com. I am a business consultant, a small business owner, and an author. I'm also a subject matter expert on government grants and contracts compliance and business systems. I frequently work with small businesses, emerging businesses, spin-outs of universities, and mid-sized to larger businesses on the elements of business success, of how their organization can start, change, and grow to be successful. So on Focus on Business, I want to work with you to examine the characteristics of successful businesses. We're going to do that through interviews with subject matter experts by providing information on critical aspects of starting and doing business, as well as looking at business and personal success stories from businesses and business leaders who've gotten it right. So while no two businesses are exactly alike, successful businesses do share common characteristics. And those are the characteristics that we want to explore in each program. So our focus is on how business is conducted, the processes and systems, including finance, accounting, marketing, human resources, operations, legal matters, and funding that all contribute to your business's success. Each day, I work with my clients on how to build profitable, thriving businesses. So just a reminder that the comments and views on this show do not substitute for direct, specific advice from qualified business and legal experts for your business. And also, the comments, views, and opinions on this program are educational and do not reflect the views of WCOM, its board, and underwriters. The information shared is not meant to be related to specific advisory services for your business, and you should always consult with qualified, experienced, and reputable business legal advisors before making any decision that impacts your business. And I want to say thank you for our underwriters and to WCOM for providing a platform for Focus on Business. I'll be putting this podcast of the program and resources and other information on today's topics on FocusOnBusinessRadio.com. And you can find past podcasts and information on guests on FocusBusinessRadio.com. So today's topic is government contract accounting systems, government contractor business systems. And why we want to dig into that is what I alluded to last week, is that there are key business systems when you're a government contractor. You have to comply with the requirements the government imposes, whether that's a federal, a state, or a local government. Today's program, I'm focusing on the federal requirements, and more specifically, as it relates to the Department of Defense contractors and as it relates to those systems that carry into other agencies. There may be some differences between non-DOD and DOD agencies and the requirements, but overall, if you satisfy these specific requirements that have been identified by the government for sound business contractor systems, then you should be able to satisfy any audit, any requirements that's imposed on your business because you become a government contractor or a subcontractor to a prime contractor. So we did an overview last week of the business systems, the accounting, the procurement, materials management, asset management, earned value management systems, and cost estimating. So this program is strictly focused on the accounting system, and there may be some elements we touch on those other systems as they interact with the accounting system. So what is an accounting system? Well, it's defined as the methods, procedures, controls, like your policies, segregation of roles and responsibilities, signing authorities, that are established in your business to gather, record, classify, segregate, summarize, interpret, and present comprehensive, accurate, and timely financial data. The accounting system is used for reporting in compliance with all applicable laws, regulations, and management decisions. The subsystems that the government looks to and that we use in other formats in the private sector include direct and indirect costing, compensation, billing, labor, and that includes your time charging and record keeping of the time spent on different activities and on different projects, and general information technology requirements. Now, as far as the government's concerned, an acceptable accounting system complies with the requirements that they have laid out. So that's, again, all laws, regulations, and requirements as specified in the contracts. Both the system and the data it produces have to be reliable. The system minimizes the risk of misallocating and improper charging. So we're talking misallocating. It's a shared cost where you're going to split it across projects based on a reasonable and objective standard. And we'll talk about that in more detail in a little bit. And also, we want to be consistent in how contract charges and allocations are used for our billing procedures and processes based on the contract terms and conditions. And now the government has established 19 criteria that accounting systems must meet to be compliant and acceptable. I'm going to try to get through a lot of those criteria today. We may not get all 19 in. But the foundation of the criteria and the requirements include compliance with the laws and regulations. And so that's the accounting rules, that's labor rules, that's all those aspects that the business has to do correctly in order to be compliant, meeting the requirements of how things are done. And I'm frequently going to go back to labor costs, labor tracking, because that is an internal system and something that doesn't have an independent third-party support. Timesheets are critical to making sure that we can capture costs and put them in the appropriate buckets of direct and indirect costs and be able to document that we're doing that. So again, compliance with laws and regulations regarding cost accounting systems, recognition and charging of those costs, the allowability and limitations of costs. So we may have a legitimate business cost, but it is expressly prohibited from being charged or any way, shape, or form getting into the costs that could be charged to the government contracts. And so we look at FAR 31 to look at those cost allowability elements and limitations on costs. So one example, this is in a non-DOD application, is that there are salary caps that are annually updated by the government on how much executive's compensation can get in to a particular contract. And so when we're looking at costs and contract requirements on costs, again, we frequently turn to the primary thing for commercial entities, FAR 31. We also look to FAR 3, Part 3 and Part 28, and for the Department of Defense, the DFAR 231. And so some of the key requirements that I want to summarize for you, and again, hopefully we're going to get through all 19 today, but it's going to be pushing it. But the segregation of costs of direct and indirect costs, the identification of direct where there's a one-to-one relationship because you have that project, you have that cost, and those costs that because you have a group of projects, you have that cost. So like it's an overhead or indirect overhead. And if you are in business, you have certain costs. And so those are considered G&A or general and administrative or facilities and administration costs. So we want our accounting system, we not only want to, it must be able to identify based on activity and the cause of a cost, the cost driver, how that cost is classified, direct or indirect. We also want to be logical and consistent to accumulate those costs. And when we're talking about those indirect costs, those shared costs, we come up with an allocation basis so that when we pull those costs together, when we go them, bring them all together, add them up, we then want to assign those costs to all the projects and all the activities that have benefited from those costs. And so that's talking about getting an allocation of indirect costs to the cost objectives. We also want to, in a manufacturing area and production-oriented businesses, want to make sure that we can segregate pre-production and production costs. And we also need to be aware that we have to be compliant with certain accounting practices, such as GAAP or the cost accounting standards that the government puts in place for CAS, cost accounting standard covered contracts. So let's talk a little bit about CAS. There are segments of CAS, and when do they come into play? Well, if you have a single $50 million plus contract, it's going to be CAS covered. If you have multiple contracts that total in net awards in one single year of $50 million, and you've had at least one trigger award of $7.5 million, then it's your CAS covered. Once your CAS covered, any contract that's $850,000 or more at the current level is covered by CAS also. So that means you're getting into higher requirements than you are if you're just operating under the FAR. A CAS covered contract has the CAS requirements and the FAR 31 requirements. Now, if you get a $7.5 million contract, but you haven't had $50 million in total net awards in a single year, then you have a requirement called modified CAS coverage. And every contract of $850,000 or more will be modified CAS coverage. Otherwise, if you haven't had those trigger awards, you haven't hit the $50 million in awards in a single year, then you're looking at FAR 31 for your cost requirements. So when we look at these elements, when we look at the CAS elements of consistency, which are found in CAS 401 and 402, if we're looking at general cost measurement requirements that are in all the CAS regulations, how we assign costs are defined by CAS 406. We're looking at an allowable cost in addition to what's specified in FAR 31. We're going to be looking at CAS 405, etc. So we have, you know, these requirements that are put there based on the size and number of contracts you've had and the size of those contracts. And that's how we determine how robust your system has to be. Which level is, are you FAR covered? That has a set of requirements. Are you modified CAS covered? That ups the requirements. And then if you're CAS covered, it takes it to the next level. Some of the attorneys I work with in this realm like to tell the clients, and I like to agree with it every time I hear it, is that if you are FAR covered at this time and you're pursuing larger and more contracts, while you're compliant with the FAR level requirements, you should be working to get your business positioned to be able to satisfy the modified CAS coverage at a minimum. Once you get to modified CAS coverage levels, you should be able to start working and investing in becoming a CAS covered organization capable of executing under the CAS rules if you're going to pursue $50 million or more in contracts. Now, CAS covered award is something we need to talk about in that definition also. So that's any contract that in the language of the contract has the CAS clause included in it. Net awards, that terminology, $50 million or more in net awards, is actually the total value of the negotiated CAS covered prime and subcontracts, including the value of potential options. And then you subtract out things like cancellations, terminations, and other types of credit transactions. So that's how you arrive at that $50 million threshold. The FAR has a slightly different definition of a net award in that it says it's the max quantity and the highest final price paid alternative that will go to the government in the form of cost. And that's how you would determine that net award amount. So government auditors tend to view contract modifications as new awards and contracts for determining the CAS coverage. And so we need to keep that in mind. So we know that as businesses, as prime or subcontractors working on U.S. government contracts, we have to obey laws, regulations, and the contract requirements. We have to comply with CAS and or FAR, the Federal Acquisition Regulations, and any agency or department requirements that are specified. Number two, we have to look at the consistency and applications on our methods and our techniques for estimating. Remember, the cost estimating system is a business system that we will look at later, and it's a mandated system for government contractors. And in that estimating, accumulating, and reporting of all costs that are incurred for the same purposes, same circumstances, we must be treating costs the same and establishing the criteria for cost classifications, written policies on costs, etc. Now, for measuring costs, the government says, well, there's different ways you can look at that. You can put in a historical cost, you can put in an actual cost, or you can put in a standard cost. The majority of project expenses are, for most businesses, actual cost. Sometimes in a manufacturing environment or a product, commercial product production, those types of things, you will generate a standard cost. When I was in the automotive industry, we had standard structures at standard cost. We had standard structures at actual cost. We had actual cost at actual structure. And so that's what the government's kind of looking at and saying, well, in the manufacturing environment, you may set a standard cost, and you could use that standard cost as long as it's set in an objective, logical process that follows sound accounting and financial practices. So measuring cost is important to understand, and the consistency of how you measure costs. If you do a change in inventory valuation, if you do a change in standard costs year over year, those are things that you need to be identified and addressed, because comparability of financial results period to period is one of the requirements that's also specified under GAAP and under government contracting requirements. We also want to talk about cost assignment and the type of costs. Are you accrual-based accounting? Are you cash-based accounting? Do you have period costs, or do you have process costs? You want to historically match the revenue to the cost that generated the revenue. Well, we all know we have new revenue standards, and sometimes under those standards, costs are period costs in 1 year, and the revenues get recognized in a subsequent period because it has to be earned, and we haven't earned it in the period in which the costs were incurred because the customer has not benefited from that item that we've produced for them, and we haven't delivered it. They haven't been able to use it. Again, back to unallowable costs in FAR 31, and sometimes agency to agency. I want to say that, remind everyone of this. There may be some costs that are allowed under one agency and are not allowed under another. So one agency may allow you to include your patent costs, and other agencies may say, well, it's allowable if you met these standards, but you're never going to meet those standards, and so it's unallowable. Cost allocation and cost pools, the indirect rates, developing those rates, the methods, the written procedures, the ability to exclude those unallowable costs, and to choose a basis of allocation, whether that's total cost input, modified total direct cost, or some other basis. Something else we also want to think about is understanding how we're going to treat a cost. From a business standpoint, any cost could be a direct cost if you had the time and the resources and the systems to track each cost to where it ultimately goes to. So you could order 1,000 ink pens for your office. And if you wanted to, every one of those ink pens could be put into inventory and then charged to a project that someone uses every time they go to use it. So when they take the pen out of the inventory, it can get charged to a particular project. That's not realistic for 99.9% of the businesses. So we have costs that are true direct costs that we can do that. So an hour of labor that's worked on a particular project is that project's hour. That's a direct cost. The benefits, the fringe benefits, such as payroll taxes, paid time off, bonuses of certain nature, become fringe costs. Those are our fringe costs, and they can be treated as indirect or direct. I have clients that have made the decision that they can identify each specific cost associated with an employee that's associated with their payroll tax, their paid time off, and all the other benefits. And so they want to take the time and make the effort to put fringe and any fringe elements in it as a direct cost. And they have that option. In their case, they don't have overhead costs because their organization is very focused on what it does. And so they have G&A costs. So they only have one indirect rate. And so when we look at that, when we look at our cost categories, once we've determined that fringe costs are going to be direct costs for a business or they're going to be indirect, then they are consistently treated that way forever and ever. Amen. So it's rare that a company would change or be allowed to change a category of costs from direct to indirect. And if you did, There would be processes for making those changes, restating financial statements, and other things that have to take place in order to make sure the comparability, consistency, and the value of the change is captured. There are project costs. And with project costs, we're looking at the elements of what costs. It's making a P&L, a profit and loss statement, for each project. And so that's the direct costs. That are things like labor. If you're treating fringe as direct, or if you're allocating fringe to that, to the cost objectives, then fringe, part of fringe would go into the direct labor and the direct costs of a project. And then you would also have other direct costs, such as maybe travel, lab supplies, office supplies that are specialized. And so when we're looking at the organization and we're trying to determine how we're going to do anything, the earlier you just make the decisions and the better documented those decisions are in policies and procedures, the better your organization is going to be able to function to keep things consistent and to have the government rate your accounting system as being compliant. Now, an element of these business systems, this accounting system, is documentation. And every accounting system, whether you're a government contractor or not a contractor, revolves around having supported documentation for each transaction. So timesheets, expense reports with receipts, vendor invoices, shipping documents such as the bill of lading, verification and sign-offs where you've received goods or components and you've verified the quantities. I have several clients that invariably it seems that a shipment never comes in exactly at the right quantity of what they've ordered. There's a few more or they're missing something. And so whether that's pens or that's lab supplies or that's tooling for your manufacturing equipment and you have multiple tools you've ordered, it's important to make sure that you're documenting what is received, what's paid for, what you can verify, prices, and have that supporting documentation to go into your accounting system. Also within that, payments in, invoices out, the verification and the authorization of making a payment, of placing an order, of setting up a vendor, of establishing a customer, of making sure you have accurate invoices on in your system or in supplementing systems, subsystems that ensure that you're able to invoice your customer. In this case, we're talking about the customer being the U.S. government, accurately in the format, in the manner, with the level of detail, and the technological information, accurate dates, accurate quantities, project numbers, formats, all of that needs to be there, needs to be accurate. And you need to have the backup documentation for where you've arrived at that invoice amount. So if you're invoicing labor, if you're invoicing travel, if you're invoicing some kind of other direct cost other than travel or labor, then you need to make sure that you have a process, a documented process for how you develop an invoice that you're going to provide to the government. Because one of the key requirements also within the government is they pay on their terms when presented with an accurate and complete and timely invoice. So you send them a defective invoice that's missing some element, the clock does not start on the payment period for them. So let's say you have a 30-day. So you invoice them and within 30 days, the government pays you. But it's 30 days of a complete and accurate invoice. If you don't get a complete and accurate invoice in, that clock doesn't start ticking. And a little reminder, the government doesn't have to tell you that your invoice is defective. It's up to you to make sure your systems have the elements in there and you understand those elements in setting up the system to come to be able to produce the invoice or through auxiliary or subsystems or even manual systems, that invoice is complete and accurate and that there is supporting documentation for every element that is being invoiced. So the question I get from a lot of clients when we're starting to do this is, do I have to buy an expensive government contracting accounting software to be able to be a government contractor? No. The government dictates the result your accounting system must be able to generate and the standards it must meet. It can't tell you what system it is. So they won't go out and tell you to buy product D software. But they will tell you that the elements that that software that you use and the accounting system, how you set it up, must have internal controls, must have oversight, must have management knowledge, must have the elements of being able to do all of these things that we were just talking about, to segregate cost, to properly identify cost, to properly track costs, to cost objectives, to pull costs together, to be able to produce invoices accurate and complete, and that you're able to produce financial reports for internal use, for tax purposes, for management use, and for the billing and tracking of government contracts that meet the requirements and the standards of being consistent, timely, and accurate. So how do you do that? Well, you can do it as on a system as simple as QuickBooks. If it's properly structured, utilizing your chart of accounts and a numbering scheme, setting up the proper accounts, utilizing class codes and job codes, or creating individual projects or customer names within QuickBooks that allows you to segregate the costs between direct and indirect and unallowable, and different types of direct and indirect costs. If you can take the costs down to the particular projects and the periods within those projects. So if I come in and a project starts January 1st and runs to December 31st, and my financial year is also January 1st to December 31st, that's a pretty clear-cut financial statement. The dates intersect or consistent. Now, if I have a project that runs March 1st to February 28th, I might have a little bit more of a difference and have to have certain processes in to be able to report the spending from March 1st to February 28th against the budget period or the financial period of a particular contract. You may run into it being July 1st to June 30th or October 1st to September 30th, or it could be December 14th to December 13th. The period, the project period, the budget periods, the financial periods of the business and of the contracts are something that you need to be able to slice and dice your numbers to do the reporting accurately, just as you need to be able to capture the period costs within a month of performance or cumulatively from the last time you invoiced, and be able to document that you've done the proper cost tracking and cost assignment of direct costs, that you've been able to allocate the indirect costs properly, that you're using the correct indirect rates. And here's another proviso: your system, your actual costs, your actual indirect rates may be different than your billing rate or your rate in your the contract you can charge. You're going to want every element to be able to be identified and built within your accounting system, either in the QuickBooks or other software that you're using, or in the supporting system such as exports to Excel, Access database models, other database models, EVMS systems, that's earned value management systems, project systems, whatever systems you have in place, whatever systems that use financial data need to be reconcilable back to your books, your records, your QuickBooks, whatever that official record is of your accounting system. And so let's pick on QuickBooks a little bit. QuickBooks Online has different functionality than QuickBooks Desktop Enterprise. And so there maybe just need to upgrade from one type of QuickBooks to another, and that's fairly simple. You may reach a point, if you're a manufacturing entity and you have complex manufacturing bills and material, you may outgrow a QuickBooks and need to go into a different type of software. And so those decisions are need to determine those for each business. Each business will comply with the outcomes that need to occur. The outputs, the accurate, timely financial information that's properly documented, that has allowable and unallowable costs identified, that has direct and indirect costs identified by project, by customer, by period, and whether that's your financial year, it's the government fiscal year, it's the project budget period, it's the cumulative performance period for all the contracts. That's what your system needs to be able to do. Some of it can be manual. Some of it can be in your accounting system. The more manual you get, the more manual interface and interaction, the more careful you have to be about making sure that your data and your information used reconciles back to your accounting system. I had a client, I think it was just last year actually, that went through a invoice audit. So the government picked one single invoice. I think it was roughly $34,000, $35,000. The auditor came in. He wanted to look at every timesheet. He wanted to track those timesheets into the payroll records, from the payroll records into the accounting system, from the accounting system to the invoice. He did that for every cost that was on that invoice. And if you don't have the records, if it isn't easily reconciled, you get more and more questions. Your invoice may be accurate. It may have all the backup documentation. But imagine that auditor coming in, wanting to do that invoice audit, and you had no timesheets. And you're required to keep timesheets. You have failed in your timekeeping, time charging element, and documentation and record keeping element, and in your accounting system, because you have failed to keep an accurate record in the accounting system because you don't have a document supporting the costs. So you have to understand how the systems are interrelated, how the record keeping requirements are interrelated, how the standards are established for identifying costs, and know things that a cost that is normally allowable that does not have supporting documentation becomes an unallowable cost. And so let's say some of your costs are not documented. Let's say everybody that works on a project directly keeps a timesheet. Let's say that every member of management and every other person, the janitor, the front desk receptionist, anybody that's in the indirect activities or only does some direct activities, doesn't keep a timesheet. Are you compliant in your accounting system and in the timekeeping requirements, the time charging and invoicing requirements, if there's no supporting documentation for anyone doing an indirect activity? That's your receptionist, that's your janitor, that's probably your CEO, that might be your HR department, that can be your accounting department. Let's say you have 100 employees, 75 of them are direct, and 25 of them do indirect activities. Are you compliant if 99 of them keep timesheets and one person never keeps a timesheet? No, you're not compliant. The costs in your system do not reflect accuracy because that one timesheet, that one record is unsupported. Well, you want to put it in unallowable. Well, the requirement is, yes, the cost becomes unallowable if it's not documented and supported. But your system requirements require you to have documentation of every cost. Every cost is supposed to be supported. The timesheet is the only documentation within your organization for a cost that's generated within the organization. There is no third-party, objective, arm's-length transaction that takes place to say, here's an invoice. Here's the bill of lading for something that was received. Here's where we paid this, based on what that invoice was. So, documentation and record keeping in support of the financial information and the compliance with the requirements for financial information have to be embedded in your accounting system. So that's understanding the requirements for GAAP. If you're an IFRS company, an international financial, the international accounting standards, if you're CAS covered, if you're FAR covered, if there is some specific requirement in your contract for the type of activity you're engaging in, say a cost is now is allowable because of a certain circumstance or is not allowable because of the legislation that was passed to authorize a particular project, and that project authorization said, no, you can't charge rent. for whatever reason, then rent can't be charged to that project. And your systems have to be compliant and have to have the capability to make sure costs are properly categorized, documented, and trackable, and traceable, and allocable, and allowable into your system. So when we look at the normal accounting systems, we say the information needs to be timely, it needs to be accurate, it needs to be complete, and it needs to be done on consistent standards. We have all of those requirements, but we have another layer of requirement when we start looking at the specific contract terms or the regulations underlying those contracts. And so when we sign a contract that says we will comply with the rules and regulations that the government imposes for me to be a U.S. government contractor or a subcontractor, and the prime has signed off to say I'm going to comply with those requirements and I'm going to pass those requirements through to my subcontractors, if we say we're doing it, we have to be doing it. We have to document our process for achieving that. The more your accounting system is complete within a software system for processes, for approvals, the more people you have involved in the various aspects of transactions within your accounting system that has checks and balances. So let's say you need segregation of duties is what it's technically called. And so you need someone to be able to approve a vendor to be set up in your accounting system, someone else to set it up in the accounting system, someone to put in the invoices, and then someone to make the payments. Somewhere in there has to be the checks and balance of at least two, preferably three or more people, able to check and make sure that that is a legitimate system set up. So the vendor is legitimate, the order is legitimate, you've received it, the payment to that vendor is legitimate, and that's an internal control element that is imposed by normal accounting standard and emphasized for when it comes from the government standpoint. Accurate, timely, complete, consistent, comparable. This is what the government looks into your system and has these requirements in. If you're in a QuickBooks and you have to export the information into an Excel spreadsheet, and the Excel spreadsheet then you manually intervene in, or you import the data into a model you've built in Excel spreadsheets, and then you crank through the data, the government's going to want you to validate that the information that went from QuickBooks or any accounting system into your Excel spreadsheet, into the model, and the results that came out, that information can be tracked from the origin of the costs included clear through until it reaches their invoice or any invoice. Because what you do for the government, you must do for your other commercial clients. What you do for commercial clients also has to be done for the government. So understanding your requirements from the time you decide to become a government contractor and you sign up on SAM to pursue government contracts or other awards. What are you certifying and what are you representing? What size of business are you? What level of business are you doing? What are you qualified to do? Are you certifying as a small business, a minority-owned business, a woman-owned business, a service-disabled veteran business, etc.? You need to make sure you understand what you're certifying to, what you're setting up to, and what you're saying, I'm telling the truth when I'm doing this. Those become compliance requirements, annual certifications, and statements of disclosure when you're CAS covered of things. When you're modified CAS coverage, if you have multiple business units and one's CAS covered and another unit isn't, you have to understand what your business's expectations are and what it's signing up to comply with from the beginning. You sign up and go into the SAM system, say, I'm going to comply with this set of rules and this set of requirements, and I'm this type of business. You get your first award, you're representing that your accounting system and other systems that are required, depending on the size of the award, are at least FAR compliant, and compliant with the requirements that each agency sets up, each department sets up for their contractors. And then as the contracts and the amount of the awards increase, and you get more and more requirements. And every time an award comes out or a request for proposal or a request for quote comes in and you start down that process, whatever is in that solicitation notice becomes embedded in what you're agreeing to have in place in what you're doing, that you're that type of contractor, that you meet those minimum standards for the performance requirements, and that your accounting system does those. I can't overemphasize how critical your accounting system is, because that ultimately determines whether you can bill the government a legitimate cost, a supported cost, and put it on the invoice and have minimal to no risk, preferably no risk, for that invoice getting rejected because it's not accurate, it's not complete, or the costs are misstated, or you don't have documentation. Your accounting system needs to be complete, it needs to be contained, it needs to have all the elements of the requirements of a sound, financially in control accounting system. Your internal controls need to be in place, signatory levels, approval levels, purchasing controls, payment controls, timesheets. All the flow of costs into the system need to be documented and in proper procedures and policies and processes for the organization to track and control those costs. As a compliance person, I always emphasize with my clients that making a mistake is going to happen because we're human, we have human systems. But deliberately making a decision to not comply with a record keeping requirement, with a business systems requirement, with a requirement related to how you employ people. So let's say you have a Department of Defense contract that says only U.S. citizens can work on it, and you have no U.S. citizens with that technical skill. And so you're going to use what employees you have. Or you decide to get independent contractors that are U.S. citizens. Well, okay, so first you're going to use employees that you have, which satisfy the employee requirement, but they're not U.S. citizens, so you're not compliant. Your alternative you've decided on is, well, you're going to bring in U.S. citizens, but they're not going to be employees. You're going to make them independent contractors. You're still not compliant. So understand the letter of the terms and the conditions and what it means to be not compliant. You can be not compliant just through a breach of internal controls or a failure of a system or some human error. But a deliberate decision to not comply is committing a fraud on the government. It can be a civil penalty or it can be a criminal pursuit of that. So I've had a lot of clients have subcontractors or subrecipients in either their government contracts or their awards receive emails or other communication from their subs that spells out what they're doing and that they're not compliant. Their accounting system or how they developed their invoice or how they were tracking the costs and what project they charged the cost to. And so right there is something that my clients have to step in and say, we are compliant. Our subs are going to be compliant. That's what we signed up for. Therefore, we have to take action in monitoring our subcontractors and making that choice. We have to not pay that subcontractor, or we have to take some other action with regard to terminating that subcontractor for convenience, for failure on performance, for whatever element that is within the contract to protect their businesses. So that can be something as large as a university helping on a research project and they fail to comply with something. It can be a small business that turns out you gave a small business award and it turns out they're a nonprofit, not the same thing. So we need to be able to screen and qualify our vendors from the accounting and financial system aspect and our purchasing and procurement system aspect. So when we think of our purchasing system, it feeds costs into the accounting system and it takes resources and assets, cash, out of that accounting system. So as an accounting system element, verifying vendors, getting a complete vendor file that has proper legal name, proper business category and type, whether that is they're a small business, they're a nonprofit, they're a small business with a minority status, they're in a hub zone, any of those elements that come into understanding the complete aspect and definition of our vendors, screening them, their technical capability, and looking to their accounting systems and imposing on their systems the requirements that we must, as a prime, as a sub, passing on to a sub, the requirements that are in the contracts and the requirements of the various systems. And so understanding if you are a prime contractor, if you're a subcontractor going to use another subcontractor, what is it that you have to monitor those subcontractors and subrecipients for? What is the expectation you pass through in their contract? And how do you validate, monitor, and audit their business systems to make sure they're compliant and the cost that they're passing on to you is an allowable cost, because it is accurate, it is timely, it does reflect the requirements in an accounting system and how those costs are accumulated, etc. So businesses need to understand accounting is the basis, the foundation, the most critical aspect of making sure that the costs are accumulated and chargeable to the government. Within that accounting system, it's documentation, it's cost policies, it's the procurement process, and with regard to conflict, financial conflicts of interest or other conflicts of interest, to accuracy of and verification of vendors and vendor information, of accuracy of invoices from vendors, tracking vendors, making sure taxes are remitted or collected, if there are sales and use tax in there. All of those elements of compliance is what we sign up for when we decide to do business with the government. We may not like the requirements that are being posed, but they're not optional. So if the contract says you need to use U.S. citizen employees, use U.S. citizen employees. If the contract says your minimum wage on the contract for paying employees working on the contract is $10 an hour or $15 an hour or $20 an hour or whatever it is, then that is something you have to comply with. And it's something you have to understand in order to get your costs accurate and consistent within your financial systems. Document, document, document your business policies, your business procedures, your business processes, your segregation and separation of duties so that there is oversight and there are financial controls. Make sure that the system is flowing in and producing cost and capturing cost and going into the accounting system are also robust, that meet their requirements. And we'll talk about some of those systems, the cost estimating system, the procurement system, materials and asset management, and earned value management systems in later programs. But if your accounting system is not capable, if it doesn't meet the standard, it really doesn't matter what the rest of your organization is doing, because you can't invoice the government accurately and have the adequate and expected support of those costs and those invoices to make those costs fully allowable and acceptable in the government's eyes if your accounting system is not compliant. Compliance is pretty much a binary thing. You're compliant or you're not compliant. It's a one or a zero. And so if you're not compliant and you're choosing not to be compliant, and you're documenting that you're choosing not to be compliant through some kind of communication that is not privileged, then you're setting yourself up for other issues. If you're expected to keep timesheets, keep timesheets. If you're expected to keep some other kind of documentation, then keep that documentation and make sure whatever that documentation meets the standards for that particular cost. Timesheets have certain requirements. Accurate invoices and supporting data, of matching of what you ordered versus what you received and what was paid for. Those elements come into play in making sure that when the auditor steps in the door, that he or she can track the costs from the point that cost was generated through the system with supporting documentation and into the accounting system and out of the accounting system onto an invoice that they're going to pay for, hopefully. Costs that are allowable become unallowable when the accounting system fails, when the accounting system isn't to the standard, when there's inadequate or no documentation of the cost, or when your system is not to the standard the government has established for accurate, timely, complete, consistent allowability and allocability of costs. Remember, it is the job of the accounting department to ensure the costs are accurate, that they are allowable for any proposal or any transaction, and that it meets the government's cost principles and standards. You're responsible for preparing wage and other direct cost elements and tracking those costs. You're responsible for being able to calculate indirect rates to segregate the costs, depending on whether you're doing FAR or CAS or modified CAS. You're responsible to ensure that management can certify that the pricing or cost information used in the contract is accurate, and that they can certify that it includes only allowable costs. And it's crucial that the accounting department, the finance element of the business, establishes and adheres to policies and procedures that screen out unallowable costs or put a cap on costs that are limited, and that includes allowable indirect levels. Let's say you proposed an indirect rate of 75% and your rate is 125%. How much can you charge the government? Well, if they've put a cap on the indirect rate at 75% and that's what they've awarded, that's all you can charge the project. Now, that doesn't mean the other 50 points of cost gets moved to a different project. No, it gets assigned to the project that incurred it. It's its fair share of allocation. It just means there are some indirect costs that are not billable to the government. And so that's cost shifting, and the government is looking to make sure your accounting system and the documents support it show that there will not be cost shifting between projects or customers. There is a liability, again, civil and criminal aspects of it, for misrepresenting your business's compliance, for making false statements and either in the solicitation or in any certifications and representations, or when you submit your proposals, when you make your disclosure statements, when you submit your indirect rate proposals. And you don't want to be faced with fraud and other charges. So at worst, the least of your issue is that you don't get to charge a cost that was a legitimate cost to the government because it's not proper, because it's not documented, etc. The far extreme is you better look at good in orange or stripes, because criminal charges can be coming your way when the auditor comes in and determines that you've misrepresented your business and financial systems, that your accounting system is inadequate, that you've overcharged or mischarged the government for costs, and all of the people in the organization. Ignorance is not a defense. If you've signed off on it as an individual or member of management in the organization saying that, yes, it is proper, you're stating it is proper. You have now lied to the government. If you say we're complying with all these elements, this is the true price, this is the true cost, we only used U.S. employees, U.S. citizen employees on the project, and that's not true, you have to understand that you're taking on the liability as a business and as members of the organization. That's your name you're signing. So your accounting system is your foundational system for being a government contractor. It's how you're going to get paid and be able to justify those costs, to support those costs, and not get them disallowed. Your accounting system matters. It's not an expense to have a compliant accounting system. It's an investment to have a compliant accounting system. And the elements in your business that you put into because the government has come and done business with you are sound elements that give you a look into the organization and are generally business system requirements that make a business stronger. The more information you can see, the more information you know, the better your business is when it comes to looking at your accounting and financial information. You need to be able to satisfy the government contracting requirements, your tax filing requirements, your management requirements, and any laws and regulations that are in place or terms and conditions in your contract. Make sure your information is timely, accurate, consistent, and compliant with the requirements you've agreed to. Tell the truth. Make the disclosures and be sure you understand what you're agreeing to before you accept the first dollar of investment. And until next time, everyone, stay focused on the important things. And the important things are sound business systems. Next time, we'll be talking about purchasing and procurement systems for government contractors and items like subcontracting, subrecipients, pass-through requirements, and how to monitor your subrecipients. Until next time, this is Lee Strickland, and you've been listening to Focus on Business on WCOM FM 103.5.